You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 100.5 FM.
The proposed Enbridge Northern Gateway Pipeline Project, which seeks to construct over 1,000 kilometers of oil pipeline between Alberta and the BC coast, passed a milestone before the new year. On December 19th, the Canadian National Energy Board's Joint Review Panel recommended that the federal government approve the project subject to over 200 conditions. EcoJustice is an organization that provides legal services to those on the front lines of the environmental movement. It represents several groups that oppose the project. Barry Robinson is one of the staff lawyers currently reviewing the panel's recommendations, and he joins me by phone this morning from Calgary, Alberta. Hello, Barry.
Hi, good morning, Jane.
Now, first, could you tell us about the panel's findings?
Well, the panel has found that the project, in their words, is in the Canadian public interest, and they use the phrase that Canadians would be better off with the project than without. Obviously, the groups that I represent would disagree with that.
Did it have anything to say about adverse effects from the pipeline?
Well, of all the, you know, it's kind of strange that of all the possible adverse effects that one might think from the pipeline in terms of spills and things like that, the panel actually only found two adverse effects from the entire project, and that was adverse effects on caribou habitat for 5 herds and on grizzly bear. But surprisingly, found no adverse impact or potential adverse impact on, you know, for example, the BC coast and coastal environments.
Now, much has been made in what I've seen in the media of the 200 or over 200 required conditions. What is the nature of these conditions?
Well, a lot of the conditions are requirements for Enbridge to do further studies or to prepare further plans, such as detailed emergency response plans and to do further studies on certain environmental issues. And I guess our position on those is it seems that a number of those studies, in our view, should have been completed before the panel decided that the project was in the Canadian public interest. And, you know, just an example, the basic question of will diluted bitumen, which is the product they'll be shipping, will it sink or float in the marine environment if it's spilled? You know, that kind of basic question was never answered in the report.
So they're going to study it after they built it?
Well, they're going to study it. They're going to study it between now and building it. But you know, the onus on the joint review panel that put out the report was to determine if there were going to be a likelihood of significant adverse effects. And we just question how they could determine, for example, no significant adverse effects on the BC coast when basic questions such as will this product sink or float if it's spilled were never answered.
Now, let's just assume for a moment that Enbridge complies with all the 209 conditions, follows all of those. Will these conditions curb the pipeline's risks?
Well, certainly some of the conditions, do address, pipeline safety and marine safety, such things as high-performance coatings on the pipeline and that sort of thing. But it seems to us that the panel's report sort of assumes that everything goes perfectly, that all the conditions that are put in place are followed. And for example, we know in a spill that Enbridge had in Michigan in 2010 that it ignored a number of its own safety rules and procedures. So it seems to us that the panel sort of had rose-colored glasses on in assuming that any conditions they set and any procedures in place would be perfectly implemented.
Now, let's assume that, let's say, at the study that you were just talking about on what diluted bitumen does and if it sinks and there's no way to recover it from the ocean floor, would that then be, if that study happened and found that, would that then be a deal breaker for the pipeline?
Well, no, that's the interesting thing is it says that Enbridge has to do a further study to determine that. But if it finds that it sinks, it there's no provision there that therefore then the project does not proceed. And a number of the interveners in the process pointed out that if this product actually sinks, anywhere beyond about 30 meters depth, that there's no current technology to get it off of the ocean floor. So, again, it just seems to be a gap that should have been filled before the panel made its recommendation.
And then I guess the other question about those conditions is who is going to be monitoring whether or not they're fulfilled?
Well, in theory, it's the National Energy Board that has a responsibility to monitor each of those conditions and see that they're fulfilled. The Enbridge's practice in the past has been that it has missed many of its commitments. As short as 2 days ago, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency said Enbridge had missed another deadline in cleaning up that spill I mentioned in Marshall, Michigan, and we're 3.5 years after that spill. So the onus will be on the National Energy Board to monitor the conditions. But as I said, even if there are conditions, things don't always go perfectly. And I think the U.S. situation demonstrates that.
What kind of evidence did the panel hear before they came to their decision?
Well, they had about 180 days of testimony from different people, and they had thousands of pages of evidence. What we found in the report is it seemed that the panel was giving weight to Enbridge's evidence of safety procedures and the things they would have put in place, but very little weight to the evidence of opposing evidence of the interveners. And I don't know why the panel would do that. They gave very little explanation in the report of how they weighed certain pieces of evidence against other pieces of evidence. So it's a confusing part of the report to really know how they reached their conclusion.
How confident are you that Enbridge, even with the best will in the world, would be able to deal with a spill?
Well, as some of the evidence showed, as I said, if spill in the marine environment is very difficult to clean up. As I said, in Marshall, Michigan, we're 3.5 years after that spill into the Kalamazoo River, and they're still trying to clean up. After the Exxon Valdez spill in 1989, there's still, for example, there's still a pod of orca that has never recovered. There's still areas where oil is found subsurface on certain shoreline areas. So, and that's a good example because the panel said that any impacts of a marine spill would last only a few months to a couple of years, whereas the impacts of the Exxon Valdez are being still felt 25 years later.
Did Enbridge's track record or reference to these previous spills come before the panel?
Absolutely. We presented specific evidence on a number of past violations, particularly in the U.S., where Enbridge had failed to follow either the regulatory requirements or their own requirements. And we raised that definitely as an issue that, in the Marshall, Michigan spill, in the U.S. National Transportation Safety Board study of that, they said Enbridge had a culture of deviance from its own procedures. And they said that its response to the spill was like that of the Keystone Cops. And to us, that did not sort of instill confidence in Enbridge's ability to deal with a spill.
Oh, I didn't read that in the media here, that Enbridge has a culture of deviance from its own procedures.
Yeah, that was in the U.S. National Transportation Safety Board report into the Marshall, Michigan spill.
What are the next steps now?
Well, now this report now goes in front of the federal cabinet. The federal cabinet has the ultimate decision-making power, and they have said they will make that decision likely before June of this year.
And have they included any reference to First Nations, consultation with First Nations?
Well, there's further First Nations consultation going on right now on the report. There is a provision for that to occur, and it is occurring right now. But, as you're probably well aware, there's a number of First Nations who are very opposed to this project, and there's certainly issues of First Nation rights and title that have not been resolved. So I expect that even the federal cabinet decision in June will not be the end of the story.
Now, there are many people who say that even if that oil stayed in the pipeline and in the tankers and never spilled a drop, that still we should be leaving that in the ground. Did that come up in the hearings?
Well, we tried to raise that in the hearings, and the panel ruled that consideration of sort of where is this oil coming from and where is it going to was outside the scope of the hearings. But I think you're absolutely right. The discussion that wasn't had during the panel process, and discussion, frankly, that Canadians have just not had, is, do we want to ship 200 million barrels of oil per year to China? And do we want to increase, you know, the oil sands production from its current levels of 2 million barrels a day to 5 million barrels a day, with all the impacts that that has on air quality and water quality and wildlife and aboriginal use of those resources and climate change? Those were all deemed to be outside the scope of the hearing, so they were never discussed.
Well, thank you very much for talking to me this morning, Barry. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your interest in this.
I've been speaking with Barry Robinson. He's staff lawyer at EcoJustice, and we've been speaking about the Canadian National Energy Board's recommendation that the federal government approve the Northern Gateway Pipeline Project.